Now, as you know, or you may not know, I'm actually a musician, and I've always been fascinated with the songwriting process. But I've never had any success at writing a song, and I thought I would enlist the help of Mr. Paul Quigley, who is a prolific songwriter, I believe.
Well, thank you very much. I am indeed, Simon. 40 years of songwriting, and I'd like to think I've learnt a trick or two over those years. So, yes, I am indeed.
So where do you start when you want to write a song then?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm sure a lot of people would like to know the answer to that. And I think the answer generally is you can come at a song in various different ways, and there isn't any one scripted way. For example, Barry Manilow, Elton John, all the classics, Neil Sedaka, they all came at songs in different ways. Now, my own approach to songwriting comes very much from the music point of view, is that I get an idea for a melody first. I don't start with the lyrics or the actual narrative within the song. I try and find a musical emotion, I suppose you'd call it, whether it's an up-tempo rocker or a very sort of slow, sad song, or a love song, which is a bit more sort of melancholy. And I'll find a chord sequence that's I write mostly on guitar, occasionally piano, but mostly guitar. So I'll find a chord pattern. So once I've got a chord pattern, chord progression, whether it's C major, D major, A minor, even something incredibly simple, don't ever be afraid of writing a song where you think, oh, that could have been done before. Just about every chord sequence in the world has been done by someone, but it's your take on it that's important. So don't ever feel restrained by it. And that's the way I look at it as well, because it tends to mute itself over time as you write the song. So basically you attack the song by grabbing the music, then you think, well, what is this suggesting me? What sort of emotion is this bringing out? And if it's a happy song, then that will go that direction, and you write the lyrics. And so I actually write the words into the music. And a lot of people do it the other way around, and they'll tend to write a poem first, and then they're trying to insert the music or overlay the chord progression over the top. Well, of course it can work, and maybe in a band situation where you've got four or five people, there may be ideas coming from them, and you'll end up with something, you know, a sort of a Frankenstein of a song. Personally, I like more control over a song. That's why I do write on my own, and always have done. And then if I've been in a band, I'll take the music to the band and get them to pretty much play it. That's pretty much how it works for me. So yes, if you're a singer-songwriter, you've obviously got total control over the lyrics and the music. But if you're in a band situation, then you've got to have a bit of democracy going on there. That must be a little bit different. So you have to bear in mind there's different ways of approaching the song. Maybe one member of the band would bring a set of lyrics, and then another guy or a woman would then say, oh, I've got this chord sequence, and they'll do it in a collaborative committee sort of method. But for singer-songwriters and solo performers, where you have basically responsible for the song content as well as the music as well, you've got a lot more scope. But of course, no one's ever going to tell you, oh, I don't want to do it that way. So the problem with songwriting then becomes is that when is the final take that you come up with as a writer? When is that the definitive version, or when do you carry on needing to do more work on it? The only way you can judge that is by playing it to a few people that you know and trust, and don't mind when they give you some criticism to give you some feedback on how it's going, so that you can just say, oh, you know, you need to do this here, you need to, and take on board their suggestions. Because oftentimes, as listeners, they're the best arbiters, they're the best judges of all, because they are the listening public. So just because they're not musicians, that doesn't matter really. I mean, ask a cleaning lady or a man, you know, a security guard, what do you think of this if you ever get to play it on an MP3 demo? Just play it to all sorts of different people, whatever rough you come up with. But that's the way I approach it, is that it's very much a work in progress until somebody says, yeah, I really like that. Then I think you know you're onto a good thing. Or if you don't get any feedback, it means you've still got work to do.
Do you find that the process has changed at all since you've lost your sight?
That's an interesting question, actually. I'd never consider it. Only in practical terms of once the song is down and you need to try and record it, then that becomes a challenge, because obviously you can't see buttons and sliders and screens anymore. But the actual initial creativity process, I think, is identical, because it all happens inside your mind anyway, sighted or unsighted. So I don't find that that's much of a problem. Obviously, then when you write it down and you have to sort of learn the lines, because effectively when you're a singer-songwriter, you have to learn your own lines, because you write a song, you have to remember the lyrics. That is very tricky. Very tricky, because sometimes you've got, you know, about three or four verses, a bridge and a chorus, and you're sitting there in front of this sort of method of where there's audio, and you have to play it back to hear it again, you have to memorize it. That can be really tricky, as it is with sort of when you try to memorize phone numbers, where you sort of dictate it into your little voice recorder or whatever to remember those. It's the same with song lyrics. You just literally have to commit it all to memory almost as soon as you've written it down, because if once you move on to another song particularly, you tend to forget what you've done before. So it's a huge memory memory method of mapping memory and memorizing the lyrics, and of course the music. What the way I find it works for me is that once the melody, the musical chords, once I literally stroke, finger the frets and remember the muscle memory in my fingers, to the actual sound coming out of my vocal cords, your larynx, once those start to gel together and become one homogeneous song effectively, that's when they lock in together, and you tend to find that you can go onto autopilot then. I mean, I've never driven a car, obviously, because I'm ERP, but I mean, had I been the case, from people that I know, once you start to learn the gears, you're kind of looking at them for apparently, and then after a while you'd go on autopilot, you don't even look at the gear stick anymore, you just go on auto. And that's, I think, if there was a certain analogy from sighted and unsighted, it would be that you don't tend to think about gear changes anymore. It's the same with music. You don't think about where your fingers are going on your instrument. That's got to go on autopilot, because you're really trying to get inside the guts of the song, inside of the soul of the song. Because once you've written it, that for me is only the template. You know, you then have to give a performance every single time you do it, because every time is different. I mean, you'll have to record it once, probably for your album or your single if you do that, or whatever. But beyond that, once you take it out on the road and perform it live, it has to be fresh each time. So you never really want to ring fence it too hard and say, this is the definitive version, and you sound like the recording, because people could obviously just listen to the recording. So you have to try and keep it alive and give it a bit of sort of space in which to breathe once you're playing that song. So there's composition of the lyrics, composition of the music, and then, of course, performance. That is very much part of it for me, because I do intend at the end of the day, they don't just sit there as a recording. They do actually going to, you know, get out there on the road and get performed and people to actually experience and share that experience live with the writer. And I think that to me is quite honestly one of the reasons, the main reasons why I do it, because I love it so much. And it connects with people. When you can't connect in a visual medium, you connect on any other channel you can. And this is absolutely one of them, Simon.
Yeah, it's funny you saying that, because I've been playing the sax for, 40 years this year, and whenever we play a gig as a band, I'm like you, I know where I'm going to play, and but I never have fixed in my mind what I'm going to play, so I have a couple of notes that I know that I'm going to fire off on.
Absolutely.
And then it depends on the night, and that makes it quite exciting as well, that, and it keeps it creatively fresh, I think.
You're absolutely right, and I think particularly for soloing, that is exactly how it should be. You know roughly which chord progression you're in, whether it's C major, D minor, so you know where your notes are on your instrument. This is obviously talking from a blind or visually impaired person's point of view, because it is slightly different. We have to wing it a bit more, but I think therein, as you quite rightly say, Simon, therein lies the excitement. Because if it were prescripted and you knew, you'd learnt it like by rote parrot fashion, it would be a bit tedious, not just for the audience but for yourself as a musician, because there's no spontaneity about it. Now, I think spontaneity is everything. So long as you know roughly how many bars you've got, you know, 16 bars, and it's in, you know, D minor or G major, sorted, because you know what your scales are. You can extemporize within that, almost like a jazz musician, and that's how it should be. That's, I think, that is, therein lies the difference between live music and recorded music. And I think people who go to a live show and expecting to hear a recording are kind of going for the wrong reasons for a musician, particularly people like ourselves who can't see too well, if at all. That's where we love to connect, because I think, I don't know about you, but sometimes even if you make a mistake, it humanizes that performance, and I think it's wonderful, because it shows to yourself and to everybody who's listening that you are a human and you're not just a MIDI recorder or some digital performer.
Yeah, sometimes if I make a mistake, I try and do it again and try and incorporate it in what I was doing.
yes, absolutely. There was one of my favourite mistakes on recorded music ever, which we kept in, was on the Pink Floyd album called Wish You Were Here, and there was a very long track on it that Pink Floyd played called Shine On You Crazy Diamond. And there's this very iconic guitar riff at the beginning. And just as Dave Gilmour, who's the guitar player, goes into this solo, he pulls off it. He does what they call a pull off on an open string, and it thwangs out. And it's just complete, as any guitarist will tell you, it was a massive error, a big mistake. But the fortuitous thing for Dave Gilmour and the band, and probably recording time, mind you, they were probably so rich it didn't matter to them at Abbey Road, was that the key that he dropped, this big open string, was right in the same key as the actual song was in. And it sounded brilliant. It's like it was a mistake he could never have made deliberately. He could never have created it. And it was just one of those serendipitous mistakes that you just think, that is just brilliant. And it comes from what you're saying, the fact that he was obviously so confident in his ability as a performer and a player that he just let it go. He just played almost with gay abandon, to use an old phrase. He didn't mind if, because he thought, well, I can always take it again, blah, blah, blah. But they obviously played it back and thought, wow, that's fantastic. That mistake is brilliant. And it was a brilliant mistake. You could never have created, he could never have written it in. It just had to have happened by accident, and it was perfect. And I just think that is why music is so amazing, because the happy accidents, as I like to call them, are often the bits where you go, wow, this is like, you know, this is the muse talking here, you know. I love it.
Yeah, talking to Dave Gilmore, I've seen Dave Gilmore perform probably live about six times.
And really? Wow.
And I've watched constantly, you know, over the years, various versions of Comfortably Numb. And yeah, he did a version of it in 2016 on the latest Live in Pompeii. And I would say, quintessentially, it is the best performance out of them all. And you think, after all these years, all the way it all flows together, it's a framework that you recognise, but within that, it's different.
That's exactly right, and I think that's the key to great songwriting, certainly as solo instruments over the top. It's like David Bowie's early songs. He would reinterpret those early songs in his later years in a much, much different way. And the same, I quite agree, Dave Gilmore, when he wrote that song in 1979, I believe, The Wall came out with the Comfortably Numb track. So he's had, what, 30-odd, 40 years, as you say, to regraft that whole song. And I can understand exactly what you mean, that he's obviously kept that whole song completely fresh in his mind. And I'd agree that the Comfortably Numb is probably one of the, if not the greatest Dave Gilmore solo he ever played. And what a song to be able to extemporise and still keep it fresh, what, 40 years later?
Well, you and I could talk about music, and we probably will do indefinitely. But
hope so.
Time has caught up with us, and you've got a brand new album coming out. But you can keep up with Paul on, you're quite active on Twitter, aren't you?
Very active on Twitter, yes. My Twitter handle is twitter.com/hellsbells. I'll spell that HELLSBELLES_UK. And facebook.com/PaulQuigleyUK.
Paul, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you for your time, Simon. Again. And we'll catch up shortly.
Yep. Thanks again, Simon. Take care. All the best. Cheers.